Anyway, joining us right now is David Reicher, an American screenwriter and film director. Of course, having a hit, well, we hope it's going to be a hit movie, The Girl, coming out. David, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
You're more than welcome. I'm Dave Isaac, the host, alongside Greg Isaac and, of course, Joseph Erdo.
Hi, Erdo.
And, David, thank you again for calling. This is, of course, the magazine show on Breakthrough Thinking. And, you know, with soon-to-be-released film, The Girl, let me ask you a question. I always wanted to ask a director this question. What is it like leading up to the release? What do you experience? Is it sort of like a coach that would have certain experiences leading up to the Super Bowl or to a big game? Is that how you feel?
I don't know what it's like to be heading into the Super Bowl, but yeah. The way I feel as a filmmaker, I'm an independent filmmaker, is that when a film opens, it's a great occasion, but the work of the director never ends. And the same energy that I need to write the script and excite people to come on board for the filming, I still need to invite people to see the film. So there's really, I don't know when actually I get to rest, but it is very exciting. I was in Phoenix the last few days for some special screenings of another film that I had worked on called Sleep Dealer. And I had a chance to speak about The Girl with the audiences there. And I realized that Phoenix is a very special place for the film to open. And so I'm very excited that it's going to be in Phoenix.
Absolutely. Well, and I'll tell people about what the movie is about here in a second. But out of curiosity, what did you do while you were here in Phoenix?
Well, I spent I was there for 2 days, and I did. I feel like I didn't stop. I was in ASU, the Arizona State University, teaching 4 different classes in documentary and fiction filmmaking, and then we had 2 screenings of Sleep Dealer. One was at the Arizona Historical Museum, and the other one was in a beautiful theater, also in a museum in Tempe. I can't remember the name of it, but it's been all restored, and it's stunning.
Oh, outstanding, outstanding. Well, I did get a chance to see this, and I think very highly of it. Basically, for those listening out there, this stars Abby Cornish as a single mother who is struggling with the loss of her child to social services, and she's, through a series of circumstances, forced into basically becoming a coyote, bringing these people across the border. So tell me, you know, there seems like there's a message to a lot of the movies that you've made, and especially this one. While I was watching it, could you tell me a little bit about that message, why this was an important project for you?
Yes, yes, of course. I mean, my starting point as a filmmaker is that I'm trying to answer a question that never seems complete for me, which is, what does it mean to be an American? I was born in Boston, and my family are mostly New Englanders, but I'm always wrestling with what it means to be a child of immigrants, to have stories of families that came here many generations ago, as well as grandparents who came here in the 1920s and 30s, and the new immigrants who have been coming to New York and much of the country in the last 20 years, whose lives my own world is connected to, find themselves in a very, very different place than the stories of my own grandparents. And so I'm interested in, and I'm trying to make films that change the way we talk about immigration and immigrants, and step around all of the polemics and the politicized discussion. Because, for example, when someone realizes that the man who is cutting his lawn or the woman who is taking care of our children is a father or a mother who's had to leave their own children behind in order to come here and work, suddenly the meaning of what it is to be an immigrant changes, and the possibility to talk about commonalities presents itself. So The Girl is now the third film that I've made that is trying to find a language that allows us to talk about this subject in a new way.
So David, let me ask you a question. I think this is really cool, a great message. And you're now I have not yet seen the film. I'm looking forward to it, however. But you're looking from two perspectives, one from an American point of view, one from an immigrant point of view. And is there anything in here that maybe Americans take their life for granted, not really realizing what maybe new immigrants go through and other certain ethnicity groups go through, too?
Well, I think that, yes, the answer is yes, that the film touches upon that, but it does it in a way that the starting point of the film is a question I had as a writer. What does it mean to live in the epicenter of the American dream?
Gotcha.
And feel not hope, but sort of shut out or trapped. And this is the question that our main character, played by Abby Cornish, faces as an Anglo woman living in South Texas, working at Walmart. She appears to be she's living in the very place that all the immigrants want to get to. Why doesn't she feel filled with hope and a sense of a new future and possibilities in her life? What does it mean? And that question led me to question the very myth of the border, which is that hope is just in the north. How is it possible that the South is without hope? And how is it possible that the North is filled with hope when many of us don't feel it? And I realized hope is not in the North or the South. Hope is in the person crossing. Hope is something that's carried inside. And so the film, in a kind of turning of the border upside down, sends this Anglo woman across the border south against the current of the migrant stream, which people in Arizona know very well, this current of migrants. Abby Cornish, in spite of herself, without really thinking it through, ends up making the migrant journey in reverse from a big box store in Texas to a small village in southern Mexico. And along the way, she has a profound awakening as a human being and as a woman.
Well, David, this is great. I mean, it's timely and it's certainly important in today's society, even, you know, past societies, obviously. But I like what you said. Hope is within. And perhaps in America, maybe around the world, people aren't really looking within enough to see where they can take control as well as appreciate what they have. So what do you hope your message through this film does, and how can it make changes in America?
Oh, well, you know, that is my hope, honestly, as a filmmaker is a modest one, because I just know how complex life is and that a movie or a book can only do so much. But I do hope that people who see the film come away from it thinking a little bit differently about a subject that's become so filled with keywords that we don't even think anymore. You know how that happens? A word like terrorist or communist prevents us from thinking in the same way that the whole discussion about immigration is becoming that way. And this film, I'm hoping, will in a way set a reset button, because what happens in the film is completely unexpected. And this American woman who has the attitude of a victim. She acts at the beginning of the film like everyone is against her. You know, nobody is there to help her, which isn't in fact true. And she comes through a relationship with a young girl from Mexico, a young girl, by the way, who is so powerful as a human being, this little 8-year-old girl, that she, you know, was able to push Abby Cornish, one of the finest young actors today. People will know her from films like Sucker Punch and Limitless or Bright Star. She's a very, very strong woman. Our young Mexican actress, who's never acted before, is like a firecracker and forces an awakening in this American woman that has to do with the values in her life. And so the question you asked, my hope is that people come out of the film talking about it and maybe looking at the neighborhood they live in, the state they live in a slightly different way, because it's become really almost like a deafening silence. Nothing can really be spoken about in a meaningful way when sides have been drawn this way. And so, and it's not an easy film in the sense that there things are what you would expect. The American character is a complex character, and the borderlands are presented in a complex way. But the what I think is at the very heart of the film, the kind of beating heart of the film, is that if you cross a border, whatever that border is, it can be a border of language, it can be a border of one neighborhood to another, it can be a border of misunderstanding, it can be a geographical, but when you cross it, something is possible that wasn't possible before, and that's what the film encourages us to think about.
I'd love to know a little bit more about Abby Cornish. I thought that she was excellent in this, and you mentioned some of her film credits last year. I thought she was great in Seven Psychopaths. How did you know that she was right for this role, and what did you do as a director to get her prepared for, as you said, a complex character and a wide range of emotions?
Well, she is. She's one. As a director, you tend to sort of keep an eye on actors wherever you can. You know, any actor that registers on your radar, you follow. And I first saw Abby in a film. It was her first film, and it was called Somersault, an Australian film. And soon after that, she appeared with Heath Ledger in a film called Candy. That's a stunning film. And I was. She is still very young. She just turned 30, but she was perhaps 22 years old. And I saw an actress with a rare ability not only to, quote-unquote, disappear into the role, I mean, to fully inhabit the role, but she has a remarkable strength, physical strength, and emotional strength. And I needed an actress who would really be believable in the quote-unquote, working-class life of her character, which is not a life of elegance and, you know, fineries. It's really a very, very hard-knock life. And I knew that Abby had these qualities, but the real test was whether she was prepared to learn Spanish, because the second half of the film, most of her dialogues are in Spanish. And when I met with her, I had met with several actresses for the role, all of whom assured me that they were committed to learning the dialogues in Spanish and not to worry. But Abby said, David, I don't want to learn my dialogues. I want to learn the language. I want to be able to, when we're in Mexico, speak to people off the set and speak with this little girl off the set. So this is really remarkable. She took 6 months out of her life, her professional life, to work on an independent film with a director that none of your audience has ever heard of. I felt tremendous sense of responsibility and gratitude for her trust, but I know that for her, she wants to stretch herself. I mean, like, I'm going to quote one of the greatest actors, Daniel Day-Lewis, but Abby, as a young actress, really wants to stretch herself and to put herself in a place that's risky and challenging. And she was, for me as a director, was astounding to see her master the South Texas accent and then master the Spanish accent with a borderlands education. And she will tell you, if she was on the show, that the film really changed her life. It was not just another job. And so that people who are listening know, she's cast as the lead in the new $120 million RoboCop, and it's very unusual to have an actress with this range, you know, who is truly interested in digging and creating a character, digging deep, and at the same time enjoys the sucker punch and the RoboCops of the world.
Well, and I think knowing that, you know, that story is that, you know, now we have a newfound respect for her performance in there. As I said, she was excellent here, but knowing that, you know, she gave so much to this role. But this was also probably a difficult project for you. Was this filmed in Mexico?
Yes. The film is set, on paper, it is set in the borderlands of South Texas and Tamaulipas, the Mexican bordering state, between basically the two Laredos, Laredo, Texas and Nuevo Laredo. The bulk of the film is set in the borderlands, and our character lives in San Antonio, and the little girl lives in a village in Oaxaca in southern Mexico. We had set up to as a writer, just so your listeners know, I spent almost 2 years researching in the border. I spent a lot of time in Arizona, in fact, and on both sides of the border, in Naco and Sasabe and Nogales and Douglas and Bisbee. But I spent time traveling along the border because coming from New York, I arrived thinking I could write a screenplay quickly, and I discovered that most of my preconceptions about what the border is were inadequate. They were false. And as I continued to do research, I gravitated toward the Rio Grande as the border rather than the desert, which led me to focus in Texas. And without, you know, going into too many details, I chose the two Laredos as the center for the film and then began building a foundation of trust in both towns to be able to film there. And we were scheduled to film 4 years ago, when the financial crisis hit, and the film had to be rescheduled, and the violence that everyone knows about really started to engulf that area of the border. And as a result, we were not able to film there, and I had to reset the entire movie in southern Mexico. So almost all the film is shot in the state of Oaxaca, where we painstakingly reproduced the borderlands with, you know, geographic concerns about a flat landscape, and a huge effort to find an appropriate river, a great deal of work to design the streets with very little money so that they had the kind of cacophony and visual chaos of the border. The costuming had to be appropriate for northern Mexico. But I can tell you that the film recently, when it opened in Mexico in November, I had people from Nuevo Laredo in the audience who got up afterwards and said, "I don't know how you filmed this in our hometown because it's crazy there." It was a high compliment for us.
Yes, absolutely. And I really do hope that this, right now it's scheduled to come out on March 15th in New York and L.A., and it's going to expand the next couple weeks, March 22nd, March 29th. I hope one of those additional cities is Phoenix, because I think that people here would really respond to this film.
Oh, believe me, I'm told that it will be in Phoenix. I'm pushing for it to be there. I want to come back, and I want to be able to have conversations with people in Phoenix. Phoenix is, and Arizona is, in a way, the epicenter of this national dialogue about immigration. And I would really, really be sad if the film can't be watched and discussed in Phoenix, because I think it can be. It might be, a helpful part of the dialogue.
Well, David, you know, when we would love to have you in studio when you do come back to Phoenix, because I really like your message. Your commitment to excellence certainly has attracted other people's commitment to excellence, like Abby Cornish, as well as probably the other actors and all the other staff. You just sound like you really have great purpose and meaning. We really appreciate you. David Ryker, of course, writer, director for The Girl, being released soon, March 15th, I think you said, right?
Yeah, should be here probably the end of March.
Yeah, so David Ryker, we'd love to have you on again. Definitely let us know, and we'll have you in studio.
Thank you. I really appreciate your time, and hope that your listeners, wherever they are, know that I just had a beautiful week in Phoenix.
Well, thank you so much, and we really appreciate you and the message. I love films with profound messages. This certainly is one of them. David Ryker, we'll have you on again. Thank you again for calling in.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye now.
You're more than welcome. Let's take a quick break right now. When we come back, we will have Joseph Ayardo, movie reviewer.
And Valentine's Day. All of our special Valentine's Day picks.
I can't wait. And we'll be right back.
Hopefully, you'll never have to experience a disaster such as a fire or a flood striking your home or business. But if you do, know there's someone out there who can quickly help you get life back to normal. That someone is ServiceMaster by Disaster Professionals. Just call 602-431-2222, and our professionals will be there to lend a hand. You can be confident knowing ServiceMaster Clean has over 50 years of experience restoring damaged homes and businesses after frightening events such as fires, floods, vandalisms, and other disasters. We can offer services such as emergency cleaning, smoke, soot, and odor removal, in addition to water and fire damage repair. Our solid reputation is the reason insurance companies nationwide know Service Master Clean will get the job done quickly and professionally. Plus, we guarantee to do the work right the first time, or we'll do it over with no questions asked. That's Service Master Clean. We're the company that's first to respond to your call, first to arrive on the scene, and first to guarantee relief. Because delays and hassles are the last thing you need. Remember, 602-431-2222 for Service Master Clean by Disaster Professionals. And get the clean you expect and the service you deserve.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Hopefully, you'll never have to experience a disaster such as a fire or a flood striking your home or business. But if you do, know there's someone out there who can quickly help you get life back to normal. That someone is Service Master by Disaster Professionals. Just call 602-431-2222, and our professionals will be there to lend a hand. You can be confident knowing Service Master Clean has over 50 years of experience restoring damaged homes and businesses after frightening events such as fires, floods, vandalisms, and other disasters. We can offer services such as emergency cleaning, smoke, soot, and odor removal, in addition to water and fire damage repair. Our solid reputation is the reason insurance companies nationwide know Service Master Clean will get the job done quickly and professionally. Plus, we guarantee to do the work right the first time, or we'll do it over with no questions asked. That's Service Master Clean. We're the company that's first to respond to your call, first to arrive on the scene, and first to guarantee relief. Because delays and hassles are the last thing you need. Remember, 602-431-2222 for Service Master Clean by Disaster Professionals. And get the clean you expect and the service you deserve.
At Beerenbaum & Spien PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Beerenbaum & Spien works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Hi, I'm Paul, and I'm on the spectrum.
And I'm Kim, and I'm an autism specialist.
The second Monday and Tuesday of each month at 3 p.m. on 1010 a.m.
and online at breakradioshow.com, live and archived.
We're here to help you with
Understanding Autism.